So I'm going to talk about some issues related to correlation in structural models. And well, the conclusion of the talk will be a closed formula for first or second to default swaps. Well, so I'm going to start by discussing correlation products and some problems that have arisen from the growth of the correlation market. Then I will explain how to include correlation in the Lardy-Finkelstein model for equity to credit. So a simple way to include correlation in that setting that makes computations tractable when you want to compute default swaps in that particular model. Then this will be the core of the talk. I'm going to explain a technique to extend what's called the reflection principle for the Brownian motion, which is a key tool to price, credit derivatives, for example. So I'm going to explain how this principle can be extended to the dimension 2, giving rise to closed formulas for default probabilities related to derivatives, credit or equity derivatives on two assets. And we do hope that this new method can be extended to cover the case of an arbitrary number of underlyings. And then to conclude, I will give a closed formula for first to default swap on two underlyings in the Lardy-Finkelstein setting. So correlation products, one of the current characteristic is that when you take a large portfolio and you want to manage this large portfolio of, for example, credit derivatives, most of the time you're going to use structural-based models. The most classical and, in a certain sense, the basic illustration of this fact is given by single-tranche CDOs, where the standard market model is based on a Merton model for the various components of the portfolio of credit instruments. And defaults of the various instruments are modelized by Gaussian variables that are correlated according to a certain parameter rho in my formula. So with these kind of models, you can get tractable formulas for single-tranche CDs, O's, and so on. One of the points and one of the problems that have appeared in this kind of approach to the pricing of complex credit derivative products is that, first of all, correlation is not constant. And that's a fact in the sense that when you observe correlation on markets, when you try to understand how a single-tranche CDO are priced and you compute implied correlation from them, you observe what is called correlation skews. In a very similar way than volatility smile, for example, appear in the equity market. There's a fundamental explanation to this behavior of correlation. And I would like to quote an analysis of the Bank of International Settlements, which is very illuminating, I think, because CDOs are sensitive to correlation, and correlation of defaults is typically driven by the business cycle. The correlation of risk of CDO tranches can be characterized and measured as a business cycle risk. For example, mezzanine tranches are leveraged bets on business cycle risk. And this point is certainly the main issue and the main current issue in the modeling of correlation products. Namely, one has to quantify the market views on the business cycle risk and to incorporate these views on the pricing methodology of credit derivatives. For example, one has to try to understand correlation skews appearing in the CDO market from this point of view. And this leads to a stochastic approach to correlation. So that's the first issue in the correlation, and the main issue, I think, in the correlation market. Then a second point is dynamic modeling. When you look at these standard models like one Gaussian copula, one-factor Gaussian copula models to price single tranche CDOs. These models are intrinsically static models in the sense that they are based on default probabilities at a certain horizon of time. You can make these models partially dynamics by taking into account the dynamics, for example, of CDS spreads over the time. And if you do that, you get what is called quasi-dynamic models. Using these models, you can incorporate a part of the time dependency of the of the prices or of the default probabilities, but you don't get all the informations. And here the issue is probably mainly computational, in the sense that to get a really dynamic model for this kind of products, you need to have good methods, good computational methods. And my talk will be partially devoted, or in a certain sense, mainly devoted to this computational aspect, or to go beyond the techniques that exist today to price dynamically correlation products. Then a third point, which is also very important, is the stochastic character of recovery rates. I will return on this point later. So I'm going to discuss these two of these three points, namely first the impact of correlation on recovery rates, and I'm going to present a simple model to incorporate them to the Lardy-Finkelstein setting. And then, the main part of the talk would be devoted to some technical technical stuff, namely some ideas on the probabilistic techniques that should be used to tackle the problem of computing dynamically default probabilities and so on. So just a few words on the model of Lardy-Finkelstein, which is which has given rise to credit grades. This is a robust but simple framework linking the credit and equity markets according to their own words, and it's a structural Blackox model. In particular, equity is a call option on the assets of a firm, and the firm defaults when the assets fall below a barrier. That depends on the value of the debt and on the recovery rate. One of the nice features of the model is that it explains the short-term spreads on bonds, which is one of the classical limits of structural models. There are various ways for modeling this phenomenon of short-term spreads. You can use jump processes, you can have a mark-to-market strategy and calibrate the default barrier on the market spreads and so on. The idea of the model is to introduce a random behavior of the barrier that is interpreted as a random behavior of recovery rates. And you're going to see that this interpretation is the basis for the generalization to the multiname case. Well, the model, the starting point is classical. You have a geometric Bonin motion to describe the behavior of the assets. And the first hypothesis is that there's a steady level of leverage, so that the respective level of assets and debt keeps steady over the long time, so that you can assume that the drift is equal to zero. So with this hypothesis, and with the hypothesis that the recovery rates follow a log-normal law, you have a barrier condition that is written below, that is V0 exponential sigma WT and so on. And with this model, you can compute relatively easily survival probabilities for your assets. Then one other idea which I find very nice is that starting with this model, maybe I can draw a picture. So starting with this model, which is classical barrier model, but with an uncertainty on the barrier. So starting with this model, they transform it in a model where the buyer is not random anymore, but the uncertainty comes from what happens at time zero, namely the uncertainty on the asset values at time zero, and this introduces a kind of time-dependent variation on the classical Black-Scholes model. So using a kind of transformation of the equations, you also transform the picture you have of the problem, and you have a new time dependency of the default condition and a change of point of view, a global change of point of view on the problem that leads to much simpler closed formulas for default probabilities and the quantities you can compute. So I will use this second approach and choose a Black-Scholes model, but where the time dependency goes from minus delta t to t instead of zero t. So that's the classical model, and if you want to incorporate correlation in that, the first thing to do, of course, is to include correlation at the asset level, what you can do classically by introducing correlation on the Brownian motions that are driving the asset values. But then you have the problem of correlating recovery weights. And here, well, there's a lot of information now on the qualitative behavior of recovery weights. And we know, well, first of all, that they are correlated, but moreover, they are negatively correlated to the frequency of defaults. And, it's also shown that the level of recovery weights is driven by the same fundamentals than defaults, namely economic cycles, which are approximated, these economic cycles, by the common factor in this one factor Gaussian cupola models. So in view of all these informations on recovery weights, a reasonable assumption to do, and also a reasonable way to extend to the multiname setting, the Lardy-Finkelstein model, is to assume the following facts. First of all, we're going to assume that delta t is constant over all underlyings. It means that there's the same level of uncertainty on recovery weights over all underlyings. So that's the first assumption. And the second assumption is that asset correlation can be taken as a proxy for the correlation on recovery weights. And this is based on the qualitative analysis of the correlations of the level of recovery weights with market fundamentals that basically has the same kind of behavior than the correlation of assets with respect to economic cycles. So now we have a model for the multiname case, and we would like to price the products using this model. And, of course, the challenge is to get closed formula and, if possible, numerically tractable closed formulas for them. How can this be done? Well, in the single name case, if you look at the book by Bielicki and Rutkowski, for example, and you try to understand how are built classically the formulas, the closed formulas for credit derivatives, you would see that they rely basically, well, the fundamental idea is the reflection principle for the Brownian motion and also the strong Markov properties of the Brownian motion.
Use reflection along the line to compute.
So that's the classical picture for the reflection principle. And really, if you use this correctly, you can price all classical products, all classical credit derivatives. Now, or to extend this kind of ideas to higher dimensions, and first of all to dimension 2. Well, if you look at the problem, the problem you have to face in higher dimensions is that, well, you have to compute transition properties in Fourier products. So in dimension 2, you have a cone on a certain angle, sigma, and you have to compute so transition properties with this barrier condition. And you would like to use some kind of reflection principle to do that in a systematic way. So to compute also the loads of Stokian times and so on, the joint loads of Stokian times, and all these kind of quantities that are involved in cross formulas for credit derivatives. There's a classical way to do that, which is the sum of the reflection principle, but which holds only for beta of the form P over N. And this gives you the first idea of the way the one-dimensional case can be extended to other dimensions. So the angle of sum of is the following. If you assume that the angle is of this form, you can cut the plane into pieces. And then you can take a reflection of the starting point of the body in motion along the values barriers and their reflections. The values reflections are the values ages that appear naturally because of the symmetry of the formula. And then if you want to compute the transition curve, it becomes x to y. With the barrier condition, you can show that by some kind of what's known as the inclusion-exclusion principle or this kind of combinatorial techniques, you can show that you just have to compute the probability, the transition probability from x to y without any barrier condition, and then you subtract the transition probability from x to y and the transition probability from x to y, and then you add the transition probability from x to y and so on. And the reason why is that, well, if you start doing the reflection principle, you look at all the paths from x to y, and you want to remove statistically the paths that are going from x1 to y. But then, of course, you have to take into account that you can have this kind of path going from x1 to y. And then you would add to take this phenomenon into account the path going from x2 to y, and so on. So the idea of Sommerfeld is really very nice, but the problem is that it's restricted to a very particular case, namely the case when the angles in the problem are divisors of P, which is really too restrictive for what we want to do. So the fundamental idea to do this correctly is that the classical planar Bonham motion, so that the stochastic process that drives the behavior of couples of assets, this stochastic process should be replaced by another new kind of process which will be better suited to the problem. I will explain briefly the construction of the process and then give some numerical quantities that are suggested to it and that we will use to compute probability transitions. So let's consider the problem of two-dimensional drives. So the first idea would be to generalize this Sommerfeld principle and to look at what happens if you look at the reflection of x along the one of the two drives. Well, the transition probability from x to y, we would like to write it as a transition probability from the reflection of x along the barrier
But we know this cannot be true because we have to take into account what I explained before, namely the fact that if you want to go from x prime to y, you can cross this other barrier on. You can also imagine that you first cross the barrier 2 before moving to barrier 1 and so on. So geometrically, you really face some kind of intricate problem.
So we need to do the following. First of all, we can view the planar Brownian motion as avoiding the origin of the of R2. Well, because we know that the probability zero is the origin. So this picture is true on the plane where the origin has been removed. We can read this Brownian motion to what is called the universal curve. Which is topologically the product of positive integers with the real line. And the picture is as follows.
So now we have a new process, and we know from abstract nonsense and general properties of flat spaces that the new process behaves exactly as the classical planar motion locally in space and time. That means if you look at the new process at a certain point and you look at its behavior locally, it will behave exactly as the classical planar motion. So that you can use everything you know about planar Brownian motion, provided it's the corresponding information is purely local in space and time, and you can use this to study your new process. So, for example, if you look at the Kolmogorov forward equation associated to the new process, it will be exactly the classical one, and so on. And well, you can also compute the transition probability densities for these new processes. And what you're going to get is the following kind of formula. You have integrals over some exponential functions and over Bessel functions. And, of course, when you first look at this formula, you're going to think, well, it's a weird formula. It's really complicated and so on. But that's not really the case, because if you really try to understand what happens, you're going to see that this formula is really the very natural generalization to the kind of problem you're studying of the classical formulas for heat equations or planar Brownian motions. And the reason why is that if you expand the classical Brownian density using what is called Weber's first integral, and you have the formula written, so it's 1 over 2p the integral over lambda exponential minus lambda 2 over 2 the Bessel function of index 0 lambda r d lambda. then, well, automatically the Bessel functions appear in this representation. And moreover, if you try to expand the new formula in Waddell coordinates, then you get exactly the kind of Bessel functions that appear in the expansion of the density of the new processes. So the conclusion of these observations for credit derivatives is the following. If you're in a dynamical setting with correlated products and you want to get closed formulas, there's no hope to get closed pricing formulas avoiding special functions and, or in the two-dimensional case, Bessel functions. Besides, the formulas you obtain do not seem very sympathetic at first sight. When you look at their meaning, they really correspond to equations involving, say, heat kernels and these kind of things. So numerically, they are tractable, and people in physics are used to deal with such integrals. So from the numerical point of view, that's not that bad as it seems at first sight. Well, then, how about the reflection principle?
What you want to compute is a transition probabilities and stopping time associated with this spectrum in the classical plane. The new picture you would get in the new state space. Geometrically, you can identify this with the classical puncture plane. But the point is that when you're doing this, you're losing a certain amount of information. So this is just an intuitive picture. You shouldn't take the new picture for something you shouldn't take it in a too naive way. Because the new state space has a really a different geometry than the classical plane. Anyway, here the angle beta looks that way, and the two bias look like that. And your process looks like that. So, in a certain sense, you've done, because when you have this picture, you can apply the classical reflection principle for the planar Brownian motion, but with a Bayer condition, which is just one-dimensional, and say that the transition property from x to y with the Bayer condition is the transition property from x to y without Bayer minus the transition property from x prime to y, where x prime is the reflection of x along the Bayer.
So, that's not quite compatible with the notation I used in the slides. XXT is the classical planar Brownian motion, and the first stopping time tau is given by the Bayer condition with the cone. X beta T, this is the new process we get on the new state space where the angles have been changed, and X prime of T is the x prime beta of t corresponds to the new process, but with after reflection along the barrier. The point is that when you have this kind of formula, you can do really all the computations you are doing classically with quasi derivatives or any derivatives on one asset or one equity. You can do them with two assets because, first of all, we can compute transition probabilities. But we can also use the Strong-Markov property of the one-dimensional Brownian motion, essentially because this Markovian property goes over in the new setting. So, for example, you can use the model to price a digital swap or any swap, in fact, on two credit instruments. The title says that it will give the price of a second to default swap. I'm going to give the price of a first to default swap, but essentially the same technique can be used in both cases. We are going to make the following assumptions. First, we are going to assume that the swap is a first to default of digital type. It means that the payoff is assumed to be settled at maturity date T. Well, you can assume that the payoff is paid when the default occurs. You would just get a formula slightly more complicated than the one I'm going to give. And, well, from the buyer of protection side, we're going to assume that it is paying continuously a spread S. And as usual, if you want to compute the price of such a product, you have to equal the expected premium payments to the expected loss payouts. And, well, you do that in the standard way, and you're going to find that the formula looks like that. The price of a digital swap is given by a certain quotient, generalizing, in fact, what happens for the single name case. And the integrals you have to compute three integrals, are integrals of Bessel functions, like the one I mentioned before. The point is that in this formula, you see very clearly two things appearing. First of all, the density of the new process I defined, which appears in the last term, the second line. And you have also a Girzenov term, which appears very clearly in the exponential, in the beginning of the double integral. So that's for A. The two other terms, one of them has exactly the same structure as A, and the other one is also a double integral. Well, I didn't write it down. But it's, instead of being a purely spatial double integral over two space variables, as it is the case for A, this B or C term has to be computed as double integral over space and time. But basically, all the integrals you get have the same kind of numerical complexity. And so this gives you a new approach, a new systematical approach to handle derivatives on two assets. So basically, I'm done. I didn't want to enter too much into technical details, but really you have the whole picture. Once you have understood the fundamental idea, namely the reflection principle in dimension two, you have all the tools to price all the products you want on two assets. Now the question, of course, is what happens if you take more than two assets? And then the point is that one of the nice things with this method is that you can opt to generalize it to any dimension because it's purely geometrical. You just have to understand the behavior of Brownian motion in higher dimensions, which is not easy, but which is something you can try to do. And so I'm trying to do it and getting some results on higher dimensions. But of course, that's quite intricated. So I'm trying to get a clear picture of what happens. But the hope really is to have a strategy that will lead to closed formula for quadratic derivatives in a dynamical setting in any dimension, leading hopefully to formulas even for derivatives on a large quantity of assets like CDOs. But of course, then the complexity will be higher. The point is that since you have this geometrical point of view, you have also a relatively clear picture of the hypothesis you have to do to simplify the problem. For example, if you look at the classical way to price CDO, the general strategy is to reduce the dimensionality of the problem by using a one-factor or multi-factor approach. And you can try to do the same with a geometrical approach, with that geometrical approach, namely to find symmetries on this buyer conditions and so on, and to incorporate them to your strategy, to your pricing strategy. Well, I think that's all I wanted to explain. Okay.
Thank you very much.